The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On this week's episode, we talk about what we're looking forward to, MAGFest. What we're not looking forward to, Christmas. And we interview Lance Guest of Last Starfighter fame. I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because you're boldly going nowhere.
Keep your hands touching off that the shit. Microphone inappropriately, and please stop touching your nipples. That is totally not cool. That is totally inappropriate. Don't do that ever again.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, I think talk about why we've been not doing as much episodes lately. I think really
talking about how Jordan's neighbor is a fucking dick.
He is a dick.
Yeah,
it's fucking dick. By the way, we are recording right now.
I figured as much.
Yeah,
yeah.
He apparently, just to explain the story to you guys, the listeners, or lack thereof. Either way, I'm still at least reminiscing with Colin on that situation that we were about to record before Thanksgiving and talking about Thanksgiving.
Joy.
We were having fun talking about food, and we started talking about pie.
Pie.
Then we started talking about pie, and then police at the door. That wasn't fun.
Yeah, I'm actually glad it was Brian that answered the door and not me.
Yeah,
because if I had opened the door and the cop had been there,
You would have gave him lip.
I wouldn't even given him lip. I just would have been like, I would have opened the door and I've been like, oh, you're fucking kidding me, right?
Are you shitting me with this? Really? It was like, you know, I could hear you out front. I'm like, we were barely talking.
Well, and that's the funny thing.
It's like, what the hell, man?
I keep telling Jordan what he needs to do is he needs to have the decibelometer on hand, like ready to go.
I saw one at a Radio Shack.
No, I mean like the
like
thing
a
is,
literal one. Not
even
that.
Even the one you have would
on my,
be fine.
Like the app on my phone. Yeah.
Yeah, we could have been like, okay, officer, we'd like you to test a supposition for us.
Right.
Our friend here is going to walk out in the hallway. He's going to hold up a decibelometer. And what is going to happen is we're going to talk at the same volume. And if it's under 55 decibels, then you need to go away because we are not breaking the law.
Exactly. It amazes me that I'm in the middle of a situation because we had the apartment, right, from the last episode. That was the one apartment I moved out of. And then you moved in with your girlfriend.
Yes.
Brian still with, you know, doing his thing, his parents.
Well, here's the funny thing about that. It's like you're living with Jordan temporarily until you get a place.
Exactly.
I'm living with my girlfriend until her lease runs out, and then her and I are getting a place, and Brian's actually moving in with us.
Yeah.
So, like, I guess, like, if push came to shove, we could record there or at your guy's place whenever you end up getting
I have no problem recording at the new place. So once you're settled in, you know, because we will know by December 15th, knock on wood. And this is actual
wood,
actual nice
fine grade particle board.
Blue.
Mahogany finish. Yeah.
That bread again.
All right.
Yeah, but
so cut all this.
Cut all this?
Yeah.
I like it. I like the banter.
Well.
Well, you want to go, "Hey everybody, welcome to Boldly Going Nowhere."
Are we shock jocks? Please, God. No,
God. This is Carlos in the chicken.
Hi. Hi. How's it going?
Beep, beep. Carlos and the chicken.
Jesus. No, it's not that. Oh, man. No, but so how was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I every year, like I come to the face to face with the fact that like, do I want to have beer and feel guilty about it because I'm drinking in front of my parents, or do I omit beer and feel fine with just the food? I did the latter this Thanksgiving, and it was actually all the beer that was there, I've already had. So I've already had before, so I knew what I was missing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't that much. I wasn't as, you know, guilty about it. And the fact is, like, I don't like having headaches, so admitting alcohol was probably the best thing I could do at that point.
Besides, it's not like you couldn't go home and drink later.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, you can dance if you want, and you can... Leave your friends behind. But your friends don't dance. They don't dance. They're
no friends of mine.
They're getting unfriended.
Yeah.
On Facebook. That's how it goes, right?
Yeah, it's I think so.
Classic.
I think so. Classic tune.
Classic tune.
Pioneers, always, if you will.
The pioneers of Facebook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but I had an interesting Thanksgiving.
So what happened to you?
Well, I went to Pittsburgh, because that's where my girlfriend lives, or her family lives, and I spent Thanksgiving with her family.
Steelers.
Oh, don't remind me. I hate
the Steelers. I'm sorry, listeners who like the Steelers. It's not the fact that I hate the Steelers and I hate other quarterback worthless burger, but I think, you know, just the Steeler fan is just really.
It's really dependent on what kind of Steelers fan you run. You run into, like, the casual Steelers fan,
which is like, yeah, Steelers, yeah.
Yeah.
Steelers, if you ask them, yeah. And then there's
the longtime Steelers fan. They're like, oh, yeah, we're really big fans of the Steelers. And then you run into the douchebag Steelers fan,
which makes up, like, 80% of, like, the actual fan
But,
base.
I mean, let's be fair, though. That is true in every city. Baltimore. True.
There are some Baltimore.
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Oh, Philly. I mean, Pittsburgh might be bad, and Baltimore is pretty bad, too. But Philadelphia, from what I've heard, is the
Eagles. The
worst.
Eagles are
the Eagles, the Flyers, the Phillies. Like, I can't honestly.
I've never met an animate Flyers fan.
Well, I mean, you don't follow hockey that much.
Well, no, but like, exactly. If, you know, someone talking about the Flyers, I never met a person that like,
hey,
really
fuck you,
loves
man.
It.
The Flyers rock.
Flyers rock, man. Oh,
God.
Lindros.
So many. Oh, Jesus. Well, don't even joke about that. Philly, do you know how close that is to Jersey?
It really is.
Like, oh, by the way, when we were actually in Philadelphia a few weeks ago, and I actually had my first Philly cheesesteak within the city of Philadelphia.
Did you go to Pat's, Geno's, or someone else?
I went to Tony Luke's.
Tony Luke's is not bad.
It's I have decided that, like, my Philly cheesesteak showdown for two fat guys eat, it's going to be Pat's versus Geno's versus Tony Luke's.
That sounds nice.
Yes.
I could get on that. Yeah.
I think you're going to be my guest host for that episode.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, like, someone who's, you know, was lived in, at least in Horsham, PA for 5 years,
yeah,
which is a suburb north of Philly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's nice. Northern Philly guy. Yeah. Yeah. Got on the two fat guys eat.
Yeah.
Hey, come on.
Anyway. No, but okay, so going back to the Steelers, right? So we I'm in Philadelphia. I mean, not Philadelphia. I'm in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Pittsburgh for the entire weekend. And I'm gonna say this much. The food, oh my God. It was so good.
Oh.
Like, here's the thing.
So what was good? What was good there? Basically. Like, what food? I mean,
what would you say?
You can say good about pretty much anything.
Well, yeah, it was all good. But if I had to say what was the best, the stuffing.
Stuffing.
Because they made it from scratch.
It's always good if you make it from scratch. I had stuffing I made from scratch in my my Thanksgiving. It was
mm-hmm.
So good.
Yep.
And plus, they make two types of stuffing.
Yeah.
Because I think the only person in my family who can't have turkey
is your dad.
Yeah. Because he's allergic to the
tryptophan.
No.
No.
It's the antibiotics. Mm. It's the antibiotics. It's not the it's not the hormones, because we had a turkey that didn't have growth hormones, but he's allergic to the antibiotics. So every year is like, oh, someone try it. Yeah, go ahead, try it, and he gets sick. So he's just like, I'm kind of turned off turkey. I'm like, I would be too. But yeah. So we had two types of stuffing: the chicken. Chicken was so good. So what else did you have besides?
Let's see. There was stuffing. There was potatoes. I don't know if people know this. Mashed potatoes and gravy is my favorite food ever. Like,
really?
Ever. Oh God, yes.
It's really good. I like. So what's the ideal mashed potato? Like, Do you have like
You know, that's a good question because, you know, everybody is like, you know, like, you know, like when you're a kid, you're force fed that soupy, watery, instant potato shit.
Right.
Right. And I mean, again, that's not bad. But then, you know, you get the lumps, you get the lumpy mashed potatoes, like the dirty ones with the skin still on them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty good.
You like that?
And I love it when they use, like, cream and butter. Oh.
I like it when you know, I mean, it's really insulting to the potato, but you take like, it's like potato skins, but then you put them, the mashed potatoes back in it. Like, you bake them, they bake the back.
Double baked potato.
Yeah, double baked potato. It's something like... And it's really creamy. Like, they mix it with, like I don't know, so much sour cream and so much butter. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, like, just make it really smooth. That's and they put bad. It back I mean, in there. That way you have like, the creaminess of, like,
mashed potato, but mashed you have potatoes, the baked potato taste.
And then you bake potato underneath. That I love that. And plus, they put, like, a layer of cheese up on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really good.
Hopefully
I
you're
love
not
it.
Listening to this while hungry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for making you hungry there. Hey there, you hungry?
Well, let's see. What else was there? Oh, get this. Her grandmother made this dish. It was a dessert, right? It was apples. It was cinnamon apples, right? But not in the way you'd think. She took these, you know those cinnamon candies?
Yeah.
You know, like the hard cinnamon candies? You suck on them and you get that vague taste of cinnamon?
Yeah.
Melted those, coated those into the apple.
Oh, jeez.
Oh my god, it was so good.
Oh my god.
It was so good.
Ooh, brother.
I know, right?
Man.
I mean, so that was good. And then, you know, I met some of her family members that I hadn't met up until this point.
So how was it? Because usually the other side of the family's it's a thing to fear, is it not?
You know what? I mean, that's what I was thinking going into it. I was just like, oh god, I'm gonna make an ass of myself and da da da. But no, they all seemed to like me, and I didn't, you know, do too much to, you know, offend them.
Wow, that's pretty good.
So, yeah, it's pretty good. Oh, well, I mean, I'm not going to be doing too much of a victory dance because, you know, later this month she gets to meet my family.
Yeah, that's a real testing.
Yeah, that's
if she can pass that fire.
Yeah, I think we'll be good.
Like catching fire.
Yeah, catching fire.
Catching fire caught the cack in his face.
Yep. That's actually a very apt metaphor. Yep. So, enough about Thanksgiving. It was good. It snowed on the way up there, which I was surprised. I was like, what the shit?
What?
Why snow?
Why snow? Go back to bed, man.
Stop that.
Snow, you're drunk. Winter, you're drunk. Winter, go home.
You are drunk.
Winter, go home. You are drunk.
Yep.
Stop showing up early.
So, I don't know about you, man. I cannot wait for MAGFest.
I am so ready for MAGFest. Hopefully I can get off for that.
Ugh.
If I can't, I'll die.
I will literally die.
A day. I'll have a stroke and day. But anyway.
I mean, because that's the thing. Like, you know, I have to work Christmas Day this year. But the trade-off is I'm getting my birthday off, which, okay, fine.
Trade a birthday for, you know, because you can't go over to your relatives anyway, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, because the thing is, like, Christmas is on a Tuesday this year.
Yeah.
So I'd literally be off Tuesday. I'd have to go up there, come back the same day. And then I have to be to work at 8:45 the next morning. I'm like, fuck that noise.
Yeah, I'd be like, fuck that noise as well.
Yeah, so yeah. I was just like, all right, I'll go ahead and I'll just be like, I'll work Christmas Day, but I'm taking off Friday. So that I'll leave good. Thursday night, crash at her parents' place because
like
I'm picking
I call
her
it,
up from
Rebecca Black Day.
Yeah.
Friday. All right, keep going. Sorry.
I got you.
That was a bad joke.
No, I got it. I got it. It was good.
Yeah. Rebecca Black Day. That's. Yeah. I'm wondering why no one played the Rebecca Black song on Black Friday. Because Rebecca Black Friday.
Right, I know, right?
Yeah, that would make
I think
much
it's
more.
Just because we've all just perpetually grown tired of that fucking song.
It is really
irritating.
It's amazing to me how something that stupid can be that popular, and also
it's popular because
it's stupid. It's a train wreck. It's a train wreck. It's so awful, and so horrible. But I can't look away. I can't stop listening to it. It's like an audible cancer. Mm-hmm. It invades, and it just sticks there. I mean, this thing was popular like what, like a year ago? Has it been a year?
I think it's been longer.
It's been longer than that, right?
Like 2011.
Yeah. I mean, it's been 2 years and still this dumb song is still stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like the dude who, like that dude who was like rapping like in the middle of it. Remember that dude?
No one remembers that dude.
That dude actually got another girl to sing another song. That's that Chinese food girl.
Oh, I like Chinese food. I make me hungry.
I'm getting hungry.
Of course, we're doing the Michael Douglas version off of the Screen Junkies show, which I love that show. It's great. Great. Makes YouTube a great place to be. Anyway, I think we should take a break, and we'll come right back after these messages.
Today's show is brought to you by Castwave Studios' Amazon page. Save up to 50% on your favorite music, movies, and more by going to castwavestudios.com/Amazon. Help this show and save money at the same time. Bookmark and click through today at castwavestudios.com/Amazon.
Is it Monday again? Are you hungry? Come on down to Mellow Mushroom Adams Morgan in our nation's capital. Mellow Mushroom has live music, trivia, bingo, and a beer club that provides member-only rewards for exploring the craft selection of 24 drafts and numerous canned and bottled brews. Most famous for their hand-tossed pizzas, pretzels baked in a stone oven. They also have calzones, hoagies, and salads using the highest quality of ingredients. Options are available for vegetarians, vegans, kids, and those on a gluten-free diet. Like them on Facebook at Mellow Mushroom and follow them on Twitter at Mellow Admo. Tell them that Castwave Studios sent you and get 20% off your bill on a Monday. That's Mellow Mushroom in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Tell them that Castwave Studios sent you.
And we're back.
Hey.
Hey. Missed you. Anyway. not as much as I miss MacFest, though.
Oh.
Because, to be honest, that is probably, like, it's the one thing a year I look forward to, and it's like my vacation every year. I know it's strange, right at the beginning of the year and the vacation, but it's it sets the year right.
It's weird, and like the thing is, after what happened last year, I don't know if we can honestly top last year.
Last year was so, the thing is, like this year, last year we had more space. Because apparently I was looking at the map. Brian Massey, our one drunk geek of Castaway Studios, sent me a map of the MagFest layout. And apparently, in terms of the gaming space, got reduced a little bit. And
well, that might just because the merch tables. Again, that zoning. To be fair though, that's probably just a basic diagram. That's probably not specifying as like, oh yeah, that's the only space they have. You got to remember, they're only told, you know, they're only told so far in advance of what they're getting.
Right.
So they might get more, they might get less. We don't know. But, I mean, I don't think, I mean, again, that's based on how many cabinets they still have up and running. Because those things are not necessarily cheap to maintain.
But I guess, see, this year is probably going to be even bigger than last year. And last year was even bigger before that.
Yeah, I know. It grows exponentially every year.
Because it's such a good festival.
It is.
And for the money, it's great.
Yeah, honestly, I think out of all the festivals I've ever been to in my life,
right,
MagFest probably ranks pretty resolutely at number one. Intervention coming at a very close second. Because by the way, Oni's gonna be at MagFest.
What?
Right?
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Right. Oni is the creator and the owner of Intervention.
Oh.
For those who aren't in the know.
Sweet.
Yeah.
We should interview him.
You mean her?
Her.
Yeah.
Huh? Huh? No. Oh, yeah. Has to be a male that created this amazing, it's a female. Oh, never mind. No, just kidding.
No, she is pretty badass. No, her and her husband are going to be there. It's going to be awesome.
Sweet.
Yes.
Oh, we met him. We're like, yeah.
Yeah, remember? Yeah.
They're awesome people.
Yeah, they are. They're good peeps.
They go peeps, yo.
Yeah.
And so John St. John, obviously he's a staple. He's always there. Wes Johnson's gonna be there.
God, I don't know. All right, I don't know if we talked about this in last year's MagFest recap.
Yeah.
But I actually got to have dinner with Wes Johnson.
Oh shit, you did?
Yeah.
Please retell that. Please, well, pray tell.
Funnily enough, this was after your guys' interview with him, which is up on the YouTube channel.
Right.
I got back to the room about 20 minutes, like, after you guys had finished up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, sitting down in the bed, and, like, Justin just popped into the other bed, and I was like, do you guys want to do something? Like, you guys had just left. You guys were out, you know, because you guys had just been stuck in the room doing interviews all day.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, like, I asked Justin, like, hey, do you want to do something? He's like, no, I have a headache.
I'm going to sit in here.
Yeah. So I'm sitting on one of the beds, and I feel something, like, I'm sitting on something, so I pull it out, and it's a manila envelope full of scripts.
Oh, okay, the manila envelope.
Yeah.
Okay. You got me worried for a second, huh? So I pull it out. I'm like, okay, Colin, don't like where this is going.
Right. So it was a manila envelope full of scripts, and so I figured it must have been, because you guys had just finished up Wes Johnson's interview, so I figured, I asked you guys, as you guys were leaving, I was like, hey, did someone leave these? He's like, oh, that must be Wes Johnson's. I'm like, oh, okay. So I still had Wes's phone number programmed into my phone. So I called him, and I was like, Mr. Johnson, you left some of your scripts in our room. I don't know if these are yours or someone else's. He's like, oh, no, those are mine. Would you mind getting those back to me at some point tonight? And I was just sitting there. I was just like, I'm not doing anything right now. I can just give them to you now if you want. He's like, well, me and my family are currently standing in line for dinner at the baseball restaurant at the bottom of the hotel. I'm like, I mean, if you're waiting in line, I can just walk down and, like, meet you guys down there. He's like, yeah, that'd be fine. So I go down in the elevator, and I bring Ian and Poff with me. Poff, Andrew Poff, you might know from Severed Dongle. He's Zach's co-host. So we go down, and we're standing there. And mind you, I had not met Wes Johnson up until this point. I mean, we had secured the interview. I personally didn't get to meet him because I was out of the room when we started recording.
It was nice.
Yeah.
So, he's a funny guy.
So this is the first time I'm meeting him. So I'm still a little nervous just because I hadn't gotten over that awkward, you know, oh, it's an internet. I mean, it's maybe an internet and a gaming personality, but, you know, you obviously sort of have that, you know, hesitation, you know, like I don't want to come off like, you know, like one of those like antisocial, you know.
Yeah.
No, just like
pretty much. So I get down there and we find him and I'm like, here are your scripts. He's like, thank you, I appreciate it. You didn't have to come down. I'm like, yeah, it's not a big deal. I wasn't doing anything. So he like looks at me for a second and then he turns around and he's like, do you guys want to have dinner with us? I'm like,
yes.
I'm like, I'm sorry? He's like, well, you know, we were waiting on some people, but they're not coming now. Do you want to have dinner with us? I'm like, because I had just eaten at that point, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, now, had I known I was going to eat dinner with the Gray Fox, I would have been like, you know what? I'm going to skip this Irish pub, because the Irish pub in National Harbor is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
That place is severely overpriced, and their waitstaff sucks. Anyway, so we go into the restaurant, and so at first I'm like, "Why don't like these two?" Because he's like, oh, "We have two chairs open. Do you want to have dinner with us?" I'm like, "Well, why don't you have my two friends? Yeah, why don't you have them sit with you? Because I actually already ate." He's like, "Oh, I mean, it's not we can just add one more. It's not a big deal." Now, mind you, he made a specific reservation for that many, but now he's just like, oh, we'll just add one more. It doesn't matter, right? So he goes to the lady, and he's like, hey, can you add one more to our table? And they're like, yeah, sure, we can do that. I'm like, oh, okay. Sure.
Dinner with Wes Johnson.
So we sat down, and here's the crazy thing, right? Like, I thought we were just going to be awkwardly sitting there, just like while, you know.
That's great. Great thing. Yeah, this is a nice con.
Dude, we're talking about.
Yeah.
Here's the crazy thing, right? In between people
slash to real life, what you thought would never happen.
Right, I never thought it would happen. So I was like, I'm not knowing what anything is gonna happen right now. So, funny thing is though, right? We sit down, we start talking about stuff. The dude is like complete. I mean, because that's the thing. You get this misconception, you know, with people who are, you know,
actors,
writers in general. Right, you just get this sort of feeling like they are above you. And that's the thing. We sat down with Wes 5 minutes into it. We're having a conversation about Star Wars. And I'm already feeling uncomfortable. And I'm just like, yeah, like Star Wars. I love Star Wars. Like, we started talking about how, like, which is the best Star Wars film. All right, Sean, what's the best Star Wars film?
Empire Strikes Back.
Thank you. Wes Johnson agrees. He agrees Empire is the best Star Wars film. And the funny thing was, I brought up the argument that Zach gives me every time. Zach, to this day, claims that Return of the Jedi is the superior film.
Zach of Severed Dongle, of course.
Yes. And to which I argue, no, Jedi is not. Jedi is...
I will say Jedi is superior in terms of dogfights.
Dogfights, I'll definitely give you that.
Yeah. In terms of, like, lightsaber fights, no, it's the one Empire.
You, yeah. That's the thing. I mentioned this argument, like, my friend brings this up, and Wes just looks at me square in the eyes like, your friend's an idiot. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. Vindification.
Jeez. Oh, yeah. Also, did you know Zach appeared in Comic Book Man?
I did know that.
Yeah, he sent you the photo as well?
Oh, I retweeted it via the Twitter account.
Yeah, that's insane. That's freaking insane. He's in his favorite show. I was like, dude, that's awesome.
Well, I mean, it's insane, but let's be honest here. I mean, we met those guys. We've now interviewed, well, Ming twice. We've now interviewed them.
Once.
But I still find it funny having talked to Walter Flanagan, who A, is on a television show, and B, podcasts on a regular basis, when he heard that we as amateur podcasters have six separate shows and like three video shows. They're like, you have six shows? What? I'm like, dude, how can this be news to you? I still find that
imagining that we keep them on a consistent basis.
Wow. Every now and again, we have a slip up. Yeah. Month or two.
Yeah.
Shut up.
It's a common occurrence with Boldy going nowhere, but you know, whatever.
I mean, yeah, it's just like we all live normal lives, and the thing is, we all have jobs, and we all have personal lives that we have to. And unfortunately, this is just, we don't get paid for this. We do this in our spare time. So sometimes this has to be pushed to the wayside to make way for real life.
And sometimes the recording space, which you thought you could record nicely, has been thwarted by noise complaints, which is just
who knew?
Who knew? But anyway, we'll have a place to record, I'm pretty sure, in the new year sometime. But
one can only hope.
Yeah. One can only hope. But Christmas seems
right around the corner.
Is right around the corner.
Like 2-3 weeks away.
Even though I was notified of his existence since back to school in September. Because I work in retail, so.
Hey, don't forget, Christmas sale's coming.
Christmas is coming. I'm like, it was mid-September. Sean. It was mid-September.
Sean.
Actually, no, it was 9/11.
Sean. What? Christmas is coming. It's fucked up.
It's fucked up. Hey, you want a cider?
No, I do not.
I drink out of it. May have peed in it a little bit. It's kind of fucked up, but you want it? You want it?
No, okay.
I'll feed you. I got a funnel. You want a funnel?
No, I'm good. Right. Thanks. But no, oh, God.
It was 9/11, for crap's sake. Like, it was September 11th, and I walked back because I work in the back of the store, and I walked back, and on my way, I saw there's kind of a gleaming glitter in the corner of in my peripheral vision, and I was like, that can't be. I looked at my phone, September 11th. I looked to the side, freaking ornaments.
Yep.
Something you're not supposed to sell until December 1st, at the earliest, in my opinion.
At least they gave you Thanksgiving off.
Oh, I have major holidays off, which is nice, but I'm just saying in terms of seeing Christmas too early. In September, it really, after Halloween, I understand retailers get excited, but September. It was still getting over summer. I'm sorry.
I get it. I've seen this thing too many times that honestly I can't let it give me an aneurysm every time I see Christmas in September.
And the fact is they're calling because a lot of stores were open on Thanksgiving. They were calling it Brown Thursday.
Oh,
Jimmy Kimmel's like, let's kill this. Let's not let this not be a thing. Like, everyone join forces. If someone says Brown Thursday with true intent, punch them in the throat.
No, yeah, totally.
I was like, yes,
yes.
Yes. Said it on yes. You said it on national TV. Thank God it's not becoming a thing, because Brown Thursday. it sounds like a joke.
You want to hear something funny?
What?
Last time I worked in retail, well, a while ago, I worked at Walmart on a Black Friday.
Yeah.
And I worked on Thanksgiving until 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Then they sent us home. And I was supposed to be in at 4 a.m. the next morning
mm-hmm.
for Black Friday sales.
Yeah.
Yeah, I slept in. rolled in the door at 12 noon. A full 8 hours late for my shift. They look at me like, as I'm walking in the door, I'm just like, they look at me and they're like, you know, you're supposed to be here at 4 a.m., right? I'm like, yeah. I literally just shrugged my shoulders. I'm like,
the appointment with my
bed. What are you going to do?
My appointment with my bed was very urgent.
That was the funny
thing. As you can see, as you point to your scalp. Right?
It's like I'm literally standing there. The guy's like looking at me like he's giving me a death glare. My boss is like, you know you're supposed to be here at 4 a.m., right? I'm like,
yeah.
And he's just like, get on your register. I'm like, okay. Like, that was the thing.
Brick.
No repercussions whatsoever. They didn't give me any shit for it. I'm just like, awesome. But mind you, that Walmart had a turnover rate of 27%.
No one cares about that job.
No. I guess that's the only reason why I got to keep it. It was like, fuck it.
No, everyone who works at Walmart's like, fuck it. Cause like, you know, you get paid like shit. You get treated like shit. Like who
where's the upside?
What's the upside? What employee would want to work there? Like, you gotta pay your employees if you want them to work hard.
Anyway. I get double discounts with my AARP benefits. Damn you. Hey, go to Life Alert. Hey, I call Life Alert and suddenly I have a friend. I ate it accidentally. It looked like a mint. Oh, God. Okay.
Anyway, this is Ryan Things down here, and speaking of shopping. In terms of Walmart employees, we don't get paid to do this for a living, right?
No, we don't.
Yeah.
I wish.
And here comes the shameless plug part. Amazon is probably be the best thing right now.
If you could,
for you to go on to Amazon, you know, castwavestudios.com/Amazon. Yeah, and get your holiday shopping in the comfort of wearing no pants. It's such a beautiful thing.
It's truly making me proud to be an American when I can shop in my underwear and not be called, not have the cops called on me.
America.
I understand. Apostrophe M-E-R-I-C-A.
I can shop in my Hannah Montana boxers, well, no, with no shame. They hit me like a wrecking ball. So anyway, also, Monday nights, if you're in the D.C. area, go to Mellow Mushroom.
Yeah,
And
go to Adams Morgan.
Adams Morgan, and follow them at Twitter at Mellow Admo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like them on Facebook, I think Mellow Mushroom, right?
Mellow Mushroom, Adams Morgan.
Mellow Mushroom, Adams Morgan. But anyway, they have great pizza.
Oh, God, yes.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back down there next Monday.
If you go down there and you mention you're with Castwave Studios sent you, you get 20% off of any food order.
Holy crap.
Right?
Dude, 20% off, that's significant. Most places only give like 10. Maybe 15.
Maybe.
20% off of your
food. Yeah.
Of your food down there in Mellow Admo. Adams
Morgan. Totally worth it.
I would go.
Oh, I know.
I'm going next Monday. That's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll get back to work in time, but I'll
whatever.
For 20% off.
Yeah, right.
Shit. Shit, son.
Yeah. And now, for you the listener, we've got a little surprise for you.
What?
Well, a few weeks ago, we had a sit-down, and we talked with one Lance guest.
Oh, yeah.
You might be like, hey, that name, it sounds familiar. Where do I know that name from? Believe it or not, exactly. Alex Rogan from The Last Starfighter. That's right. Lance
you
guessed.
Did it, my boy. You did it. Imagine every time he laughs like that, a bunch of dust comes out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're impersonating Grieg, the character that, you know, Mr. Guest spent the bulk of the movie playing, you know, comedic fiddle to.
Don't touch that button.
Anyway, but no, this is an interview we had with him where we talk about, you know, his time on The Last Starfighter, how he actually does a very surprisingly decent Johnny Cash impersonation.
Yeah, really good Johnny Cash impersonation. I was really surprised.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up here for us, but yeah, castwavestudios.com/Amazon.
Yep, and just remember to follow us on SoundCloud.
Yes.
We're on SoundCloud now.
Yep, SoundCloud.
Is it castsoundcloud.com/castwavestudios?
They can check us out. Just look up Castwave Studios.
Just look up Castwave Studios in the search bar at soundcloud.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like us on Facebook and leave us some comments about stuff.
Maybe
you know?
Some twerts.
Maybe some tweets.
Yeah.
You know, BGM podcasts. That'd be pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh? All right. How about that?
Yeah. How about that? All right. Well, without further ado, here's our interview with Lance Guest.
Hello and welcome to this very special episode of Boldly Going Nowhere. This is Colin. Sean is off working today, so I'm taking the reins. And luckily enough, I'm here interviewing probably one of the biggest interviews we've actually had on this show, science fiction legend Lance Guest. You would know him as Alex Rogan from The Last Starfighter.
Hello.
And I got to say, Lance, it's a really huge honor to have you on the show, man. Huge fan of that movie. And I actually just recently got turned on to some of your other work. I found out watching YouTube that you actually did a show on Broadway and off-Broadway, a production of Million Dollar Quartet, where you portrayed Johnny Cash.
Yes, I did. That was kind of a long time in the making. We spent about 5 or 6 years in total development and, you know, different tryout productions. And then we, from about 2004, 2005 until 2012, so I guess that's longer than that, I guess it's about 8 years. But we started doing a regular, consistent show fall of 2008, and we pretty much ran continuously until June of 2012.
And this is something
four year full shot of kind of every night, 8 shows a week.
And this is interesting. Now, I mean, obviously, I've been over your acting credits, and you know, musical theater was not something I expected to see, and is this something that's always been a passion for you, or was that a recent development?
Well, it's not really, man, I wouldn't call it technically musical theater, because it was kind of a show, kind of part history lesson, part, you know, rockabilly jam review, part story. I mean, I think the story was fairly strong, but it all just took place in one night. It was about the Million Dollar Quartet sessions, which was Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, Elvis Presley, and Johnny Cash, when they all were on Sun Records in 1956, and they all had, you know, in various stages of their careers, and it was really kind of the beginning of rock and roll and pop culture and, you know, that kind of thing that, you know, most people take for granted now, but, you know, there was a bit of a ground zero at that time, and, you know, Elvis kind of walking into the studio at that time, well, I mean, for white people anyway, was the beginning of rock and roll. I mean, it had been started prior to that by other musicians, but he was kind of the breakout guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was kind of a, for rock and roll fans, that's kind of the big bang of rock and roll, was when Elvis went in and, you know, wanted to make a record for his mom and cut this stuff
No, and that's why I was when I first saw that video, it was your performance on Letterman, and I was like, well, okay, so I'm like, I'm watching it, and I hear you like say you're Johnny Cash. I'm like, okay, and then I hear you start singing. I'm like, holy crap, he's got a set of chops on him. That's it was a real wake up call. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, it just happened to be something that I could do, you know. I play guitar and I sing a lot, but I toured with a band for a little bit, and my first job was always as an actor, but I've played guitar since I was 10 years old, so I've always kind of done that as a side thing. But you know, it's very difficult to be successful in the music business, so I never really thought about it other than just having fun and jamming with my friends. But then a friend of mine recommended me to this job, and we just kind of started from the ground up. We used a lot of guitar players and, you know, rockabilly performers and stuff to really give it the musical authenticity that it needed, and they just kind of acted like, rock stars, and that worked out. I was the only sort of non, you know, professional recording artist that was cast, so. My basic job was just as an actor, so I was able to do some of the acting stuff that I saw fit. And then we had our Sam Phillips was an actor, of course, and our Diane, and that's the girl in the show.
Yeah. Now,
I'm not really a musical theater performer, but I have been, you know, ever since that show, I get a bunch of phone calls saying, hey, you want to go do this musical here, and you want to go do that musical there, and I'm like, well, you know, there are people that are, you know, trained to do that. I'm a guy that sings Johnny Cash, but, I could do it. It's just not musical theater. You know, musical theater is not necessarily my focus, you know, in my education.
No, I understand. And so when you got turned on to this project, were you like a big Johnny Cash fan? Is that what brought you around to it?
Well, I mean, I would say I was a long-time Johnny Cash fan, I would say, because I am not one of those people that, you know, just have posters of him all over my house and, you know, T-shirts and quotes and everything, but it was the very first record I ever had when I was about 9 or 10 years old. My brother gave me a San Quentin record. And so I learned a lot of those songs early on, but, you know, with those guys, there are people that are, like, so into those guys. I wasn't necessarily, but I knew enough songs and I really liked him, and I memorized The Boy Named Sue when I was, you know, 9 years old, 10 years old, and mm-hmm. stuff. He's singing all the time for everybody, and you know, that kind of stuff. But I wasn't, you know, I've met some Johnny Cash fans that are, you know, I got nothing on them, you know.
No, and so let me ask you a question: when you meet those Johnny Cash fans, like did any of them meet you like post performance? Did they give you like a critique of how you did?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean,
they were generally pretty complimentary and positive about it. I got some people that knew him. You know, several people that knew him when he was younger, or knew him growing up, or knew him, you know, as a recording artist and stuff. They were very supportive and very positive about.
No, I mean, that's good. I mean, like, I saw it, and it was fantastic. It was really good stuff. And like I said, I went in, you know, I wouldn't say skeptical, just because, you know, I mean, but, you know, as, you know, I've seen actors, you know, go play music, and, you know, they're not bad, but it's, you know, you expect with Johnny Cash, you know, you're expecting, like, a certain level of performance. And I was like, wow, Lance Guest can really shred a guitar, man.
Well, thank you very much.
That's no problem.
It's not terribly difficult guitar work, but you know, rhythmically you gotta kind of not fall apart. So that was probably the only time that I could. That was the only times that you really notice if it falls apart is rhythmically, because the chords are fairly simple to play, and that the strumming is a fairly easy thing, but it's. I don't know that I did it as well as Johnny Cash, but I did it good enough for the show, I think.
No, and like I said, it was
sounding like him. I just got lucky because I have a fairly low singing voice, and I was able to sort of do that. And you never get a chance to do that. Like, if you're ever singing rock and roll, there's not a lot of call for somebody with a really low voice. So it was kind of fun that I could sort of make use of that.
No, it's, and that, like I said, it was a great show, and so that was like, that was what turned me on to more of your more recent stuff, and so.
Now, where did you see it? Did you see it in New York, or did you see it?
No, actually, I wasn't able to see it when it was on its Broadway run. I saw, surprise, like I said, I saw it via your Letterman performance.
Oh, that's the Letterman thing. Oh, yeah, okay.
That's when I saw it. And
yeah,
like,
that was pretty fun.
Yeah, and that was, now that was during the show's initial run, right? The Broadway run when you guys were doing it.
That was like a few weeks after we opened, as I recall. Maybe it was a little later, but it was like sometime in the spring or, actually, it might have been before we opened. Can't remember. But it was in the, I think it was the spring of 2010 that we did it.
Yeah. No, and so like I said, it was a surprising change. Like we were like, when we were preparing this interview, it was, you know, okay, well, we obviously want to watch, you know, some of his, you know, his past work. Like we watched Halloween 2, and we watched Jaws the Revenge, and we watched The Last Starfighter. But then I was like, you know, I keep running into discussions about Lance's work as Johnny Cash, and I was like, okay, so I want to look this up. And so we went and we watched it, and we were like, what? How did we not know about this before?
Well, God bless you, sir. No, it was lots of fun. You know, it was very rewarding to be given the opportunity to do that, and fun to do. The show is not really about Johnny Cash. It's really about Sam Phillips. Johnny Cash has sort of a supporting part, just like all the kind of rock stars have a supporting part. Jerry Lee is like kind of the flashiest guy at the end, but you know, everybody's got their mm-hmm. particular story. Elvis has got a story. Carl Perkins has got a story, and it's just kind of, it's nice that they're able to, in 90 minutes, you know, 60 of which are music, they're able to tell that story and, you know, make it up in a nice little, you know, little presentation / you know, history lesson, and also illuminate Sam Phillips, who was a really kind of in general, sort of an underappreciated contributor to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all think Sam was I used to call Sam the Ben Franklin of popular culture, you know, like with the, you know, flying a kite, discovering electricity kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So. No, and yeah, that's actually a very apt description of it. I mean, because, you know, he was responsible for Elvis, Jerry Lee, and, you know, I mean, they, like, right around that time when the Million Dollar Quartet thing was supposed to happen, if memory serves correctly, like, Cash was actually leaving Sun Records to go to Columbia, if memory serves correctly.
Yeah, well, we there was a little bit of, we made a few, it's not exactly precisely historically accurate, it happened within about a 6 to 12 month period, I think, but on either side, I think that all those events that are described in the show kind of all, in order to sort of make a plot for that particular night,
mm-hmm.
we tried to sort of summarize everybody's impact on Sam Phillips around that time.
Oh, right.
But it didn't happen that night, so, you know.
No, it's just...
But Cash was actually was beginning to be unsatisfied at that point, and he left, I think probably was it a year and a half later or something. And it was not very, from Sam's perspective, it was not very cool. They made up and they became, they remained friends, and it was fun. But it was pretty dramatic for Sam at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, now for fans who weren't familiar with this performance, most of our fans, them, you know, being the sci-fi, you know, nerdy culture, that's what our show's aimed at. They'd probably know you
nerd,
more.
Nerd is the word, man. Nerd is the word.
Indeed it is. And so they would know you more for your portrayal of Alex Rogan in the 1984 film The Last Starfighter.
Yes.
Now, I gotta ask you a question. Now, I think, what was it, previous to that film, you had acted in Halloween 2. Yeah, and now is that, now the director, I'm trying to remember, is the director, Nick Castle, Michael Myers in Halloween 2 or just Halloween 1?
No, I think he was just in 1, because he and John, the director, were pals,
mm-hmm.
and, are still pals, and they, know, he was just kind of like, hey, Nick, you want to do this? So he was the guy in the coveralls and the mask in the first movie, but not in the second movie. Because in the second movie, he was also, you know, he was working on his own stuff. You know, Nick did a, Nick worked on Escape from New York with John right before we shot that. And that's where we shot Halloween 2. And, you know, we just had another guy with the stunt coordinator, Dick Warlock, who played Michael in the second one.
So,
Nick actually, yeah, Nick was able to, he tells me, I mean, I was not aware of this until fairly recently, that he had seen me in some of the dailies and some of the editing, you know, sessions of Halloween 2, and he'd seen me in that, and so he sort of back-pocketed me for his last Starfighter project, which at that time was called Centauri Recruit. Centauri is a recruit. So he then, you know, I guess remembered me, and then when it came time to audition for that, I got called in, but just prior to this, so I was like, oh, okay, just go to the place where they have the audition and, you know, read now, stuff.
Now, at the time, that was the first, like, leading role you had, right?
Which? Last Starfighter?
Last Starfighter, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I had done other, you know, like small movies and, you know, TV shows and, you know, after school specials and things like that. But, yeah, I'd had movies, I'd had six feature roles, but not the lead guy. I mean, I was pretty much in almost every scene in Last Starfighter, so I guess it was a lot of work. we did most of the stuff, most of the non-sci-fi stuff in 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to pack a lot of the story part of it in 3 weeks of rehearsal where we did all the trailer park stuff. But then when it came time to do a lot of the outer space stuff, we were on a soundstage where, you know, the big Rylos planet, you know, interior, whatever that is, command station, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
We did that, and then we did all the green screen stuff as well. And that, you know, that took the remainder of the time, which was sort of majority of the shoot.
Now, like, if memory serves correctly, the most, like when you watch that film, the two characters that Alex interacts with the most are either Grieg, who's played by Dan O'Hurley, and Centauri, who is played by Robert Preston.
Yeah.
Now these were, you know, guys who had, you know, been in Hollywood, you know, since like the 50s, you know, the like late 40s, early 50s. Did you, like, when you were on set with them, did you like try to pick up acting tics off of them, or was this sort of like new for all of you?
I guess in a way, they were really more inspirational just by who they were, you know, just kind of, they were both very professional guys, and they really had a great sense of humor about what they did, and a certain amount of seriousness, although Dan was probably more serious than Press, we called him Press.
Mm-hmm.
But Press was great, you know, he had such a great sort of work ethic, and they always tell the story that those guys were never, they would never turn me down if I wanted to rehearse with them. You know, I was always saying, because we only got a few takes, we didn't really get that many. It was a quick shoot, so you kind of had to get it right the second time, moving on. So, I would just rehearse like crazy, and you know, I'm not to warn the poor guy out, because, you know, he's a total veteran. I mean, he kind of likes to get in there, and most of those guys like to get in there and, you know, bang it out the first two takes. They don't want to sit there all day and do it.
Right.
But I would make him rehearse with me, and he was totally cool. Like, he was really a stud about it. He wasn't like, hey, you know, come on, kid, you know. He was totally game for it, so... That's what I brought away from Press, and Dan would do that as well. Dan did that as well, but Dan had a lot of work, you know, in he had to come in, you know, 2 hours earlier than everybody else and get this mask on, go into, you know, 2 hours of makeup and stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, like that it's latex and, you know, a lot of the rubber mat. Yeah. I mean, that stuff, I mean, that's pretty intricately done. So that must have taken like forever to get that onto him.
It did. It took a while because they were up against. I don't have a lot of special effects knowledge, but you know, around that time, the special effects were starting to get, especially the makeup effects, were starting to get pretty sophisticated. And you know, our show is kind of had a sort of a comic book sort of feel to it. So
My next question is. Now, obviously, you know, O'Hurley had, you know, like, he had the alien mask on and everything like that. And I think one of the things he's most remembered for in that movie is just that deep, throaty laugh he does. The
oh, yes. The horse wheeze, yes.
Oh, good God. I mean, seriously, did he ever need a lozenge on set? Because, I mean...
No, I don't think so. I think he wouldn't do something that was going to hurt himself. You know, I think he had that in his back pocket, I guess, so.
No, I mean, because I just remember, like, hearing that, it does make me crack up a little bit. Did you ever have that issue where, like, he would just do that wheeze and you'd have to, like, hold in, like, a chuckle or something?
I suppose, I don't know, I was pretty serious, you know, when I did it. I was pretty stressed about the whole thing. I have a lot more fun now, you know, watching it and seeing people enjoy it than I did when I was making it. I was very serious, very intense. You know, I really wanted to make sure it wasn't a typical comic book movie, and you know, I was really trying to get it.
No, and I mean, this movie had, it was released in 1984, and it was. I kind of filled the gap because we had just gotten the last Star Wars film in 1983.
Yeah.
And, you know, we it was going to be, like, a good 10 years before we would even hear about a new one coming out. And, you know, RoboCop hadn't come on the scene yet. And so, you know, this you know, filled the void of the sci-fi nerd, you know, because it was, like, it was the first movie that, like, heavily went into, like, 3D graphics. I mean, like, I saw pictures, like, some of the rigs they were using there, and it was, like, taking up the entire room. It was crazy.
The rigs, you mean the only thing I can think about is the Death Blossom harness, which is a cage that they kind of literally spun me around upside down and did all this stuff. That was live, you know, like they strapped me in, and then it was like a three-dimensional gyroscope of just going like some kind of roller coaster ride where you're just inside of a cage and it just rolls like a ball in every possible way you can imagine.
Well, okay,
we
I got
do two eight takes of that.
Okay, I was gonna. Oh God, they made you do more than one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. How close were you to puking on set?
Kind of close. I remember the one publicity shot that they used on so many things was right after we did that. And I had this really pissed off look on my face. I mean, really pissed off look on my face. And I was like, yeah, they just dragged me out of that going, oh, we need to get the shot of you. And then they just stuck me in this chair and threw some lights on me and took this picture. And it ended up being like, the cardboard, when they have a cardboard cutout. Remember the old days? They had, I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but they had they used to have cardboard figures in front of, you know, in the movie theaters. You'd go in there and you'd be immortalized in cardboard.
Oh, yeah, the cardboard standees. Yeah, they still do that.
Yes. I haven't paid attention, so I don't know.
No. They do that, but I mean, now they're just, like, ridiculous. But you're talking, like, you know, just, you know, where it's, like, one or two characters, and, you know, it's just very subtle, where it would just say the title of the movie, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, it's just, like, you know, it takes up, like, half of the wall, and it's just, like, more background dressing than really, you know, telling you, okay, this is what's in the movie. It's right. Just, like, look at what we can do with the special effects. Yeah.
I suppose, yeah.
No, but, okay, now here's a question I've always wanted to ask. Did you ever think that, like, this movie would be held up with, like, a lot of the, you know, larger, you know, science fiction films? Because, I mean, you go online, and this is one of the films that's spoken about just as in high regard as Star Trek and Star Wars. And, I mean, because people, you know, but, I mean, it's definitely considered one of the more cult classic films.
Well, I think that's largely due to the fact that, people kind of discovered it on their own. And I think people tend to get more attached to something that they find that has not been, because it did not have a lot of push at the beginning. You know, there was not a big publicity push. There was not a whole lot of, you know, you got to watch this movie. You know, there wasn't a whole lot that came out. And people really discovered, you know, a rental and cable like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not really get screens, you know, open. So it was largely discovered in the home. And I think that was sort of a plus in a way, because I think people just had a sort of soft spot in their heart for it because it wasn't kind of jammed down their throat.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of it more as a comedy. I didn't really think of it as a sci-fi thing. I thought of it more as a tongue-in-cheek sort of not quite taking itself as seriously. And it is very goofy. You know, it has a lot of goofy stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of saw it along those lines. It wasn't really a satire of space movies, but it was. You know, poking fun of the burgeoning genre, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, you watch Star Wars, and that's pretty serious. I mean, other than the wisecracks that, you know, Harrison Ford makes, it's mm-hmm. a pretty franchise.
No, and yeah, I would definitely agree with you there that it's not out and out like a comedy, but there are far more comedic elements, and thus you find yourself, you know, enjoying this, you know, the set dressing more, you know, because you can. I honestly think I could empathize more, you know, I could feel more in the mindset of Alex Rogan than I could as Luke Skywalker or Han Solo.
Well, that's kind of what I was going for. I mean, when I say I mean, you know, the creative team, the filmmakers, the writer, the director, everybody.
Right.
But that's what we were going for, which was to say, you know, what if this really happened to a real person? And, you know, how would he really react to this? And, you know, in sort of a funny way also, but
mm-hmm.
but he would be scared, and, you know, he wouldn't be like the big hero that's, you know, he would be pretty terrified.
Yeah, but when when forced into the hero position, though, he finally did come through.
Right. But you gotta sort of acknowledge that not everybody is, you know, immediately steps up when they, you know, when presented with that opportunity.
Yeah. And
so anyway, that's what I sort of hoped to attain, and I'm glad people appreciated that. I mean, I'm glad people liked that because, you know, I guess it's not that unusual, but it did feel not very mythic. It felt just kind of regular guy. You know, what if this was you? Kind of a scene.
I mean, now it's coming. Actually, it's going to be. It's actually coming up on its 30th year.
30th year, yes.
Next year, right?
We're talking about 30 years of ancient movie history.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. I mean, I you know, you watch movies now, like, you know, Ender's Game's coming out this year. You asked me, like, would you rather go see Ender's Game or would you rather watch The Last Starfighter? I'd rather go watch The Last Starfighter, to be honest.
Well, God bless you, sir.
Well, and like I said, it's the older movies, you know, sometimes you look back on them, you know, through the rose-tinted glasses of nostalgia, but there are still some science fiction movies that, you know, hold up that you can still enjoy after, you know, like 10, 20, 100 viewings. Like, you know, you have Tron and you have this, you know, Star Wars. And, in that echelon is The Last Starfighter, because it's one of those movies you fall in love with and, you know, you're like... No, okay, you know, the effects are kind of cheesy, you know, they don't really hold up today, but...
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, what are you going to do? It was the 80s. But it's still...
Well, that's the other thing about it, is that is true. Although that was true, it was also kind of a... Oh, there's an airplane, I'm outside. There was also that... there was so much... It was kind of the research and development movie
mm-hmm.
for modern-day CGI.
Yeah.
Because they were kind of inventing a lot of the stuff as they were going along, and a lot of the procedures and a lot of the code and a lot of the... I mean, I don't know enough about it, but a lot of the stuff was kind of Edison doubt.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was kind of tried and tried and tried again, all in that movie. And so you know, had they not spent that time and that money on that movie, there would not have been as much, you know, groundwork for modern day effects.
Yeah, and
modern day computer effects.
Oh no, and I totally agree, because I mean the two movies that really pioneered it were Tron and this movie.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, it's those two films also sort of, you know, were also, you know, instrumental in sort of getting video games back into the culture, because, you know, Tron, you know, obviously Disney released that as an arcade cabinet in 82 before the crash of, you know, 83. But then Starfighter, I remember at the end of Last Starfighter, there was actually like a little blurb at the bottom saying, "Coming soon for the Atari, the Last Starfighter." And the cabinet never came.
Never came, yeah, I know. What happened there?
Well, I mean, I understand why. I mean, Atari got destroyed in the market, so it ended up getting bought out by, like, Warner Brothers or something like that. So,
I just was a pinball guy myself.
But,
that's how old I am, Colin. I was a pinball guy.
Hey, no, there's nothing wrong with that. I still play pinball. But, oh, man, no, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Lance. It's, you know, it's really nice, you know, to actually, you know, hear, you know, something from, you know, the source. You know, you can speculate from seeing it on screen, you know, how it was. But, you know, it's always nice to hear it from those who were there, those who participated. So I thank you very much for joining us, and I thank you for boldly going nowhere.
All righty. Take it easy, man.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.